Hello and welcome to another awesome episode of The Big Show here on British Tech Network. I am your interim host because the interim host is out with family tonight. So you have to somehow survive with me. Just stuff that happens. Life happens and sometimes, and yeah, I have to step in. But I have, as always, a awesome panel with me. So hopefully that's gonna make up for my lack of whatever. And starting top left, I have the only Brit on the panel. Ian, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, thank you. Back after being ill last week, geez, now the danger of meeting any group of humans in a location is you'll come back with a virus.
Yes.
So indeed
I mean,
in
not that the danger wasn't there before.
but just it seems more prevalent nowadays. But the lovely thing was I was up in Inverness seeing my eldest get married. So
Oh, nice.
that was a wonderful thing, and the father was very proud with a big silly grin on his face. So all of these things are great, and I'll come back to do work again.
Very nice.
Excellent. Next week's fun. I've got a training class. I'm being trained rather than training others, which is fun. It's a nice
Okay.
change. VMware, just a refresher. I'm
Okay,
massively out of
VMware.
date.
I was like,
I'm
what
massively
do you
out of
need
date.
training on?
VMware. I'm massively out of date. I need to refresh my cert. So that's next week's fun for me, I think. So yeah.
I mean, kind of VMware is kind of massively out of date, but it's
Yeah.
beside the point, kind
So the point, it's just one of
of.
those things of it's relevant for my industry, and therefore I need to keep that myself in my old and out of date, so I should really do it. So learn something new, refresh. That's always quite a nice
Yeah,
thing to
that's always nice. Always
yeah
good.
yeah
It's always good to learn something new.
yeah learn, and it's nice to learn as well as teach. I enjoy doing both. And as the wise man once said, those who teach learn, those who learn teach. You know, and that kind of thing goes both ways. It's great.
But someone we can probably also learn a lot from is our, what should I call you? Our resident chip expert, Tom.
That's a reasonable description.
Kind of, right?
Chips are
Well,
the interpretation of the word chips can be different in different parts of the world.
I'm an
I would say
expert.
all
expert
Kinds
on
of
chips that
chips.
are fried that come with fish.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think even that would be fine, right?
Sure,
God,
I'm a fan. I'm an expert on all kinds of chips. So Big Five Guys is my favorite chips. Let me put it that
Yes.
way.
Yes, I'm mostly an expert on Doritos and Pringles. Yeah.
Yeah, me
Pringles.
too.
Oh,
Me
you and my wife. I don't know how you guys eat Pringles. My wife just loves them.
usually a can at a time.
Right.
Exactly.
It seems the right amount.
The funny thing with Pringles is like because they're so stackable, because they're so uniform, you can do eat like five at once and like you
Right.
bite into them and then they fall apart, and it's like it's a whole thing.
I actually get a can of Pringles for my wife for her birthday most years.
Wow. Okay. That's an
Generous,
interesting
generous.
tidbit. Like, I'm
I won't
wondering
touch
why.
them. I won't touch them.
So let me get that straight. She gets you a can of Pringles that you never touch.
No, I get her a can of Pringles.
Oh, you get her. Okay, that makes more sense. I was like,
You know, my wife who eats nothing but healthy foods, but she eats Pringles. I don't understand it.
Well, no, I totally get it. Sometimes, like, I mean, you can eat healthy like 99.9% of the time, but every now and then you just need something unhealthy. You know it's bad for you, but like, it you just gotta do it.
Yeah, that's fair. You got to live, right?
Exactly.
Yes.
And speaking of living, our north, I think, are you our northernmost? Probably not. No, because I think Ian and me are more further up north.
Yes.
But you're
Yeah.
most northern in the US at least, Ben. How are you
Yeah.
doing?
Yeah. I'm good. I'm thinking I would probably be somewhere around the middle of France when it
Yeah,
comes to more
probably.
than this.
Yeah, I mean, New York is like on the like about the same, what is that? Longitude, latitude. I always confuse which one is which. Further up
Yeah.
north, I think it's about the same as I think like Portugal, like Porto or something.
Well, it's scratch that. It's Spain and Portugal, more than Portugal and Spain.
Yeah. So, yeah, the weather is definitely worse where you are than where they are. So,
yes,
yeah, Spain would be nice this time of the year. Maybe you should
move. Any time of the year.
Maybe you should move. Where should Ben move? The subject of today's show. Where should Ben move?
Exactly. I'm not so sure about that. Like, I mean, they had this summer also like 47, 48 degrees Celsius, so about 120 degrees Fahrenheit. So I'm not so sure. Not sure that was fun.
That's pretty hot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, speaking of hot things, we should talk about some hot topics. Who has the first story? And I see, like, Ian already threw one in.
Yeah, I threw one in.
So, there is some really interesting news that are coming out of a Google lawsuit, right, Ian?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just the staggering numbers, or the lengths in which Google are willing to go to be the number one. So they send a third of the Safari ad revenue to Apple.
Mm-hmm.
A third of the revenue.
Wow.
Just to keep themselves. 36% of advertising revenue makes on Apple Safari browser goes back to Apple.
Yeah. I mean, that also shows you how much money they're making that they can just say, oh, we'll just give away a third.
Like, all told, Google paid more than $26 billion to Apple, Samsung, and Mozilla to be the default search engine on those platforms.
Yeah. So, incredible. How much of that is Samsung and Google? No, Samsung and
yeah. 18 billion to Apple alone, according to the calculations done.
So there's another eight. There's another eight for the rest, basically.
Yeah, I mean, this case is all to do with competition. It's a monopolies claim that Google are taking over the world, and they're trying to find out just how much buy. And this data is coming out as part of this case.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think they didn't intend this particular bit to be like
to be public. No,
to be public, but no, someone on the witness stand basically
revealed that this is exactly what it's mind blowing, really. In a way, I mean, it does show you. I mean, it also kind of gives you that feeling that I keep wondering, shall I start trying to de-Google my stuff? And you realize, really, that ship sailed.
No, you can you can totally do it.
But yeah, that ship sailed. But what am I going to do? It's like wearing a hair. If I don't do that, I'm wearing a hair shirt.
Dude, I mean,
every other thing, I've got to jump through a hurdle in order to use an alternate platform if I don't want to just use the defaults that come on my computer. I mean, I'm a techie.
That is true.
But you're always having to change something to make it to Acacia, to DuckDuckGo, whatever. And so I've got to the point where I think, take it, whatever you like. I mean, it's not going to make it that much. That ship sold now. They've had too much data of mine now already. I mean, I can go in and delete everything. I know can kind of.
It's not going to matter.
Yeah, I know exactly. Yeah. That ship sailed.
No, I mean, I don't think the ship is sailed. I think that, I mean, there are like my cool thing last week, I think, on the big show.
I think it was last week. Yeah.
Yeah. Was KG, which is a really good alternative search engine, for example. Mm-hmm. It is paid, like it's not free. Mm. Well, there's a free tier, but it's not massive. But there is alternatives. There is alternatives to a lot of Google stuff. And I think why this lawsuit, that's why this lawsuit is so important. Because one, it shows you, I mean, as I said, if Apple gets 36% and that's about 18, 20 billion, I mean, that must be worth it for Google. That shows you how much that is really worth. And like that being the default, how important that is that they're willing to pay that much money and how much money they make by being the default.
It's more the fact that that's a drop in the ocean compared to the revenue they can make from being there. These numbers are, although they seem like monopoly money, the revenue and the presence is worth all of that and more besides to keep.
I mean, you can
to keep Alphabet essentially there at the top of the tree.
I mean, you can do the math. I mean, that's about a 50. I just did it quickly. That's about a $50 billion revenue that Apple, total, that Google right. makes total just like just from Apple. If Apple gets
6%, they wouldn't be giving Apple that money if they weren't making a ton of money.
Exactly.
Oh yeah.
And I think that's why this lawsuit is important, because we need people to be aware of this. And I think we need also our governments to step in and say, hey, maybe that is not okay. Maybe there should be more options to have different solutions, have defaults. Maybe we should support them.
Yeah, why can't, when you set up an iPhone or even your Mac mm-hmm. or PC, why can't KG be one of the options for your search engine?
Exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's. I mean, DuckDuckGo is barely in there. I think it's like, what are the options? It's Google. It's Bing, probably, Bing, and DuckDuckGo.
Yeah.
Probably that's it.
No, there's that. God, there's the other one.
Yeah,
Acacia, the other one I quite like.
Yeah, and I mean, we're talking about the iPhone because that's what we use. But think about all those people on Android. What options do they have? Right. Probably none.
Nothing. It's
probably okay. None. You use Google. Done. I mean, you have anyway a problem because you're using a Google account. You have Gmail, all of that. But even if you wanted to, do you even have an option to change it?
Not really. There was Mike Masnick of TechDirt on Mastodon put out a poll around this, asking people how many of you have changed your default engine.
Mm-hmm.
And he also did it on Twitter. And I think the results on Twitter were much different. But on Mastodon, I think he had like 100 votes. So it's not a huge sample size. But 50% of the people just used the default. And, you know, Mastodon is a pretty, pretty tech-heavy group of people compared to the general population.
Yeah.
But even you know, people that know how to change it, only 50, you know, less than 50% actually changed it.
And the question is why? Like, is it just inertia, or is it that people just don't think there are any? I mean, what you said, like, there are no other options. Maybe if that's what people think, then they don't change.
Yeah. A lot of it's what's built in. So it literally there's a box that says search. I just type in what I learn, or I just type in the address bar. You know,
because you never get asked. Like, you have to literally go into the settings and change it.
And honestly, you know, until very recently, the only really viable alternative was Bing. You know, barely viable. Barely, and frankly, Bing isn't any better than Google in terms of collecting info and ads and all that stuff. It's the same. It's the same animal. So why change to Bing? I mean, I actually thought about it, and I was using Bing on my PC browser for a while. And I go, this is crap. It's the same crap as Google. So what's the benefit for me to switch to Bing?
And here's the other
benefit
thing.
Still, this benefit would still be that it is not Google. I mean, at this point, I would take two crappy options over one crappy option.
If it wasn't a big company like Microsoft, which has many pipes to my data, if it was somebody like KG, maybe if I could click a button and, you know, if KG was a option for default on all my browsers, I would consider it, even paying $5 a month or whatever.
Yeah, but I mean, that's my point. I like, at this point, where Google has probably 90 something percent of the search market, probably 99% or 95 or something, I would take a big company, like a product from a big company like Microsoft, over not having it.
That's
like,
true.
I would
that's
rather
fair.
Have the two options instead of just one.
Right. That's fair.
And I mean, here's the other thing. Google does the job for most people.
It does.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying it's a bad product. I mean, it's getting worse, but it's not a bad product.
No. And the other thing with sort of things like Google and whatever else, it's the more you perceptively, I think it's psychological as well. You think it's the more reliable one, even though it's probably not.
Mm-mm.
And the results you're being fed, at least at the top half of the tree, are probably ones that are beneficial to Google rather than beneficial to you. And there always lies the problem. So, and you look at other ones, well, that same, if I compare the same search in two engines, you're going to get some different results. You're going to go, do I trust that? You know, and that's...
I even find with Google, you know, it used to be that I'd use the double quotes to try to stay away from all the sponsored results, but that doesn't work anymore. I mean, I can literally give the exact name of a restaurant into Google, you know, if I'm looking up there, if they're still open or something. And the first five results will not be that restaurant.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Ben, sorry, I interrupted you. You were saying.
I was going to say, if, to be perfectly honest, this is why being default makes so much more sense. Because let's just say Microsoft had done that same deal. People would be using Bing. Oh, not on Android phones, but
I mean, correct me if I'm like being wrong, but I would say that for now would have probably been better for the industry. I mean, people can still switch to Google if they want to, but as we just established, most people would have stayed on the default, and as long as the default does its job, they would have stayed with Bing, and then we would have two products instead of, or two search engines instead of one.
But there were, yeah, in the old days, there were, you, because you had, I mean, yeah, in the old days, Yahoo and AltaVista and all of those, and those ones, for the ones off the top of my head I can think of right now, were competitive products. You had choice.
Yeah,
and that's the other thing. As much as people think Google is the 800-pound giant, there's a reason that they pay this money. Look how quickly Yahoo went from being the Google of its day to basically being irrelevant.
Yeah, and not just the search engine, the entire company. Yahoo.
Right.
I mean,
but that was due primarily to a technology innovation of, you know, PageRank. And, you know, if you remember, Yahoo originally was just a curated directory of the internet.
Yes.
They didn't even have a search engine. Yeah. So the question is, why do we care that Google dominates as users? You know, there's always the, it's unfair, it stifles competition for sure. And when I see this stuff, what I think of is because of all the crap results from Google, I would like to have some competition that wouldn't produce all the crap sponsored results. When I put stuff in double quotes, it finds it.
Yep.
But if Google is using sort of less than, you know, fair business practices, it stifles people like KG. KG was a real alternative, I think Google would be pressured to clean up their results and show you less crap at the top.
And that's exactly what we're seeing. We're seeing Google paying to be in the default because they can. I mean, nobody can compete with that amount of money. Simple as that. Yeah. Like, there's literally no company. I don't even think Microsoft could do it. There's no company on the planet that could just spend $20 billion on being the default search engine. If you look at the search results, like, I mean, go back 10 years, there were ads, but there was one or two ads, and then like you had some results. Nowadays, I mean, the quality has gotten so bad, and it's getting worse and worse over time. Now that they're introducing AI, that's even like worse quality wise, because it's just not the technology, it's not there. Basically the first page is, I mean, there's no search results left. It's literally just crap. Right. And people notice that. And so we need something on the quality. And I think that's where you can compete. Compete on the quality front. Don't compete on the how many ads do I have or any of that. Just compete on what's the best quality I can provide.
Yeah, let's see if the KG model can work, you know, paying subscription instead of ads. Mm-hmm. It might work.
Yeah. I mean, it will work for some people. Sorry, Ben.
This also shows a lot about Google. They are not an Android company. They are not a search company. Mm-hmm. They are an AdSense company.
Yep. Yeah, it's true.
Makes all their money.
Yeah, and it works for them. I mean, I don't blame them. It works for them. Mm-hmm. They collect any bit of information they can about you, about anything they can find, and they sell it. They sell it to others. They sell you stuff. That's what they do.
That's their job.
Mm-hmm. And they've been making a lot of money. I mean, a lot of money that they can spend then on other less useful. No, I wouldn't say useful. on useful things that make less money. I mean, Waymo was one. Google Docs, Gmail, like anything else they've been doing. Android, I mean, the entire Android project. I mean, yeah, they're probably making some money with it, but I think in large parts, it is paid for by their ad business.
Yeah,
I think Gmail feeds the ad business monster mm-hmm. as well a little
oh,
bit.
Oh yeah, sure. Mm-hmm.
But you know, now, you know, I think Google has to be very careful because I think all these things coming up have the potential to eat at their ad business. I think mm-hmm. things like you know, cloud business, for example, they don't do that well. They're trying, but they're not doing that well.
Yeah.
And we see what it's done for Microsoft. You know, Azure is just kicking mm-hmm. butt in terms of mm-hmm. revenue for Microsoft. Google needs something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Waymo is going to make them billions of dollars every year for quite a while.
No. Yeah, not for a little while, no. Yeah. Speaking of Microsoft and like their business.
Azure.
Yeah, we have we have a story from Ben about some interesting things Microsoft is doing.
Yeah. Okay. This is probably going to be a story near and dear to everybody's heart that works in a business.
Mm-hmm.
There's this little app called Microsoft Remote Desktop, and mm-hmm. it is not a big surprise to anyone that it sucks royally on every single platform.
I wouldn't say so. It's, I mean, it,
what do you really think, Ben?
It's
it doesn't
okay.
so much suck because it's just it's one of those applications that they spend no time developing an interface for. It's just yeah. there's no
it just does throw, this
an, IP
one
address,
thing
throw an IP address in, they give it some yeah. creds when it pops yeah. up. I use it yeah. daily.
Yeah, me too. Like it's well, fine.
It announced at what was it, Microsoft Ignite?
Night, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. At Microsoft announced what looks to be its replacement, the Windows app. The Windows
awesome
app,
name.
Yeah.
Very creative name.
Uh-huh.
It will be available in the browser. It will be available on Windows, and it will be available on Apple platforms.
And on Android eventually.
Yeah, yeah, but it's not a priority.
Mm-hmm. Wonder
look,
why.
Right now it is in a preview, beta, alpha, whatever the stage. But from the looks of it, they seem to be solving remote desktop's interface program
mm-hmm.
or interface problem. Because it looks to make the whole thing of connecting to your work PC quite a bit easier from a user standpoint.
Yeah, and deeply, I mean, more deeply integrated. That's the important part. I mean, the remote desktop so far, it's been, well, there's a window and it shows you a remote desktop and that's it. Like, I mean, rarely yeah. anything from your system that you're on to the system that you're remoting into was integrated. I mean, like if you want, like we had that a couple of times where people like in our company were using remote desktop for their work account, but mm-hmm. then there was a Teams call and you couldn't do it right. because it's in a remote machine and it just didn't work. And this hopefully might fix that.
Yeah.
We so, used to I use, think it was so bad where I work, we used to use Citrix for that.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Which is even worse.
Yes. That was really bad. I mean, it was also the 90s.
Right.
But yeah, around. It was really bad. Yeah. So Ben, what's behind that? It's like an Azure desktop, or what's behind that? Azure Virtual Desktop?
From what I can see, an Azure desktop is the main focus here.
Mm-hmm.
They will go to other, they will work on other things like remote desktop later in development before it goes presumably public.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, well, not public, but final. But yeah, right now it looks to be corporate accounts only. Azure desktop only.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I'm just installing it now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No,
I already installed it.
I mean, that totally makes sense because that's probably their, for now at least, their primary business. Because I mean,
Absolutely.
all the people out there who bought a PC, they're probably not upgrading for another couple of years. So like, they don't care. They have their Windows PC. But then the corporate world, I mean, there's a lot of situations like we have it where, like, we have external partners, and they want to work with our internal systems. And like, how do they get access to it? Like zero trust environment and all of that. How do they get access? And so they get a virtual machine. So this, and then you have all the problems that you have with having a virtual machine with a remote desktop connection. So
I
this
mean,
is
you can
also
even do it if you just had a Chromebook, you know?
Yeah.
You don't even
I mean,
need a
literally,
Windows or a Mac.
That's
yeah.
They support Chrome OS.
Yeah.
So it's sort of leading to that idea that they, you know, people have talked about where, which I think is kind of nuts, but, you know, kind of going back to the thin client idea.
Yeah. To the
you're
terminal.
There with
right. Yeah.
You basically just have a terminal. I don't think
it's
people are going to buy that, but
it's
in
been
certain
kicking.
Use cases, it's really valuable.
I mean, the whole VMware Horizon stuff and all those kind of things, the idea of the remote desktop again as a thing has been around for a long while. There's no sign of it going away because it's like an adjunct to the whole virtualization platform sort of thing, where now you can not just virtualize servers, virtualize my desktops as well. So I don't know, you know, I can have a thin client, or people can bring your own device and away you go.
Yeah, there's also
interesting.
Yeah, there's also another big reason for this, which I think would probably be the main idea behind development. We just got out of a pandemic where people had to work remotely. Having this, which looks to be very easy to use, will take a lot less of a lot of strain off of company IT departments and, quite frankly, Microsoft's own technical support.
That is true. That is true. There is in this article a secondary thing that I find quite interesting, and that is like the reason why it might support Chrome and Chrome OS. And that's schools. I would say probably like for the lower grades, like elementary schools, probably Chrome OS fine. But at some point you need more. At some point you need like something much more. And so like, why not use this? Like, I mean, have the school have a virtual machine for students somewhere that is controlled, like exactly what apps they need for like whatever classes they have and whatever tests they have. I mean, we have the whole like home, like remote school stuff.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And yeah, I mean, this helps Microsoft a lot in pretty much selling their business wares.
Oh, yeah.
And the fact that it's completely platform agnostic.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Platform agnostic. And I mean, we had the whole problem that a lot of students, especially if like they're like, so not every student could afford like a computer, and not every school could afford having a computer for every, or like a powerful enough computer for every student.
Yeah.
That kind of solves it, because I mean, you need a web browser.
Yeah.
Wherever
you
find
also,
it.
But you also need the infrastructure at the other end. Don't forget, you need to have enough money in your school to be able to afford to put together a host that's capable of running
that.
50
that's
well,
what,
or it runs, or it
that's
runs
what Azure,
on Microsoft side. Exactly.
Yeah, that's what this is all about. You know, if you imagine that use case, all the students have a Chromebook and the school pays money to Azure and they're running virtual Windows from Azure.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing is, you can save money on the hardware side, which, I mean, let's face it, it's going to get destroyed anyway half of the time, or it gets dropped or whatever. So you don't want something too expensive on that end. And then invest that money that you're saving there on the other end, where you have the virtual machines.
Yeah, and I mean, this also leads to another fundamental truth about Microsoft. Like Google is an advertising company, Microsoft, especially under Satya Nadella, is a business company.
Yes.
Windows is not its main product. Its corporate products are.
Absolutely.
That's true.
That it's where the money's always been. It's for Microsoft, it's where they've always made their money. The corporate world, Windows is standard. It's not. It's the default. Even though Mac is making inroads, nowhere near the level of Windows has done, and it will continue to do so. Yeah. It's just that.
And you know what would be perfect for Microsoft to run in their Azure data centers?
Tom TSO Story. Host.
Well, TSO host as well. No, that would make sense. No, it's Tom Story because he brought he's our chip expert, and he brought something that Microsoft has released in that area.
So the other part of Ignite, Ben stories from Ignite. I guess there are a lot of stories from Microsoft Ignite this week. Is they did announce publicly that they've developed two pieces of silicon. One is basically a GPU. It's called Maya. They call it an AI accelerator, but I think you can mostly think of it as a GPU, sort of an NVIDIA AMD competitor. And also what they call an Azure Cobalt CPU, which is an ARM-based server, Neoverse core. So a server core-based.
That is interesting.
Silicon product. Yeah. So, their ideas are going to, Azure is a big business for them, and they're looking at the face of it, having to buy a bunch of AMD and NVIDIA GPUs and CPUs from AMD and Intel. I'm sure that's a ton of money, and it's probably not efficient in terms of power and everything else.
Yeah.
So these two products are pretty important. There's quite a trend in the chip business of companies like Microsoft, what we used to think of in the business as system companies, people who bought chips, doing their own design. Bespoke design is a big buzzword. I'm old enough where we used to just call them custom, but to keep bespoke up with the times, nicer. I have to. Yeah, bespoke it sounds more intelligent, I guess.
Kind of a spokesman.
Yeah, which is, the entire business of TSMC, which. Apparently, Microsoft is using to produce
them. Yeah, they're definitely using TSMC. I'm not sure what node, but I would guess it's either 3 or 5 nanometer.
It says here the latest process node, whatever that means. That's a direct quote from them. So probably 3.
Yeah, so it's probably 3.
Yeah.
And Microsoft does a lot of hardware design, and chip design for other things. So they have a pretty big team now. So it will be interesting to see, just like Apple is probably the biggest bespoke chip design company in the world, and they do a really great job at creating optimized silicon for their hardware and software. So Microsoft isn't quite in that position yet, but if you can design the AI accelerator for training and inference and the CPU for all the other stuff that's done inside a data center, and you can optimize it for power and the kind of applications that are running that they're focused on, in addition to saving money from not having to pay the third parties and the premiums for them.
Yeah, exactly.
It'll be interesting to see how much headway they make in terms of performance, and can a Microsoft-based AI processor compete with NVIDIA in the Azure data center? Probably not initially, but, over time.
The thing is, it probably doesn't have to. Because since it's owned by Microsoft, they don't care if they're gonna run more of them. Like it's their own technology, and they can improve it however they want. They might never release this to the wild and just use it internally, and even that would be fine.
Yeah, I think that's their idea. Just use it in Azure, you make a good point. If you compare one NVIDIA GPU to one Microsoft GPU, Microsoft's a little slower. Mm-hmm. So what? So you have to use 5 Microsoft GPUs. So what? Yeah. That's just a business question.
Yeah. They're probably still saving. I'm guessing they're long term at least still saving some money on that because it's their own chip. So and they can optimize it to their own need. So NVIDIA is probably not gonna do that. They're gonna do whatever they want. Whatever makes sense for their business, right? Yeah. What's interesting is that it is an ARM chip. So Microsoft
the CPU is
the CPU is like the GPU not, but the like that is interesting.
Actually, it's I don't think it's as interesting as people think because ARM's taking over.
Yeah, sure. But for a company like Microsoft, who, like, I mean, they've struggled with ARM so far, not done too much with it yet. That's interesting. Yeah, for the industry, for sure, ARM is taking over.
Yeah, I think, you know, you should be careful what I say, but my experience with Microsoft is for these kind of applications, they've always been ARM focused for internal designs for CPUs.
Okay, that's a good point. They can do whatever they want there.
It's not I think the experience of trying to port Windows to ARM has been kind of a disaster so far.
Yeah, but I mean, it still seems to be the strategy. Like very clearly, they're still pushing. Yeah. It might be very, very, very slow and not very successful, but they're still pushing in that direction.
I'm pretty sure most of the applications that people are running on Azure are not Windows, right? They're probably all Linux-based applications. Yeah,
they're running mostly Linux on Azure. Right. That's the funny
Azure
thing.
Does not run Windows remotely in any way. It's all the it underlying does. Infrastructure. I mean, infrastructure is all Linux, Microsoft Linux, whatever is really.
The virtual machines are the exception, basically.
Yeah.
And probably some customers that run some servers, like for sure, but.
Yeah, maybe mail server or something.
Don't think so. Outlook. I think even the mail servers I think are running on Linux because that's internal. They can build like have a custom Linux build because it's their own stuff.
Right.
But I mean, there's probably some people who are running their own custom whatever database servers and stuff. I mean, even SQL Server like their
that's true.
Their SQL product runs on Linux.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and that's Microsoft.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, it's like. On the server side, I mean, they offer it if you want it, but I don't think they run it very often internally.
So just give me a Linux prompt on Windows. That's all I want.
Well, you can have that. You can have that. Not a problem. WSL2. Like, not a problem. It's not great. Absolutely. But it's there.
But as far as ARM on Windows goes, from talking to people in the industry, the software is there on Microsoft's end. They're just not pushing it so far because the chips right now aren't. Mm-hmm. Well, that changes dramatically next year.
Yeah. I mean, this is a server chip. It's not something you'd put in a PC, but you would imagine, you know, if they've got the chip design capability, could they look like Apple? You know, Microsoft ships you Windows on ARM with their own CPU and optimized and all that.
I think that's what they're envisioning. That's what where they want to go. Yeah. It's just in an industry that has traditionally been very different, and it's harder. I mean, it's very hard for them to change because, like, Apple has more or less full control over it. They can just decide and say, "Well, okay, we're switching to ARM." Like, okay,
And Windows has to support software that's like 30 years old.
Exactly.
Yes.
And it's not impossible, but as I said, they have to work with their partners that build their hardware and all of that. I mean, that makes it harder.
I mean, the difference between Windows and Apple and what Apple have done is they've got that layer, the Rosetta layer, which means the older stuff can emulate and run.
Which Windows has. Windows on ARM has a Intel like Rosetta like layer. They introduced that. It's possible.
They've had that now. I've not kept up with that. So
I don't know how good it is, but it's there.
It's just be Hyper-V, won't it?
No problem.
It's just just be something using the Hyper-V layer that exists in Windows.
What is that? It's there. It's that the difficulty is not that. The difficulty is all the third party stuff. The third party software, the third party hardware, all the partnerships, all of that. Like
Your ATM machine that's running, you know, Windows. Well, XP, right?
I probably don't care too much about the ATM machine because I mean it's going to run XP until it dies. But like that is dead software for them. But like the new stuff, like it's not. Easy and they've struggled. I mean, they've shown very clearly they're struggling with that.
But I mean, the one thing I have seen in the markets, I think at this point in pretty much all levels of the market, if Intel hasn't gotten a wake up call, someone should give them one, because I wouldn't say they're in trouble yet. But there are definitely scenarios where that could happen. They've been pretty much working on the same old tech and iterations for decades.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, those high power inefficient chips, they've pretty much gotten about everything they can out of them. Yeah. If Intel hasn't internally thought about switching to ARM or another platform like RISC-V, which they almost bought a chip maker for, they need to be having that conversation.
Yeah, it's a bit like convincing everybody in Paris to speak English, though. It's going to be really hard.
Exactly. That's the thing.
I didn't ask him there.
Since we're talking about Ignite, I'm going to pick like a story from Ignite as well. So Microsoft has basically released, or is in private beta at least, a new security copilot. So they're combining their Microsoft Defender XDR, their Sentinel security analytics tools, and some other tools into a central security copilot, and it has AI smarts, which is really cool. So like if you are in the security department of your company, like whatever, internal security, cloud security, whatever you're doing, you probably are aware of their tools, I would assume. Most people probably are. But this is really cool because it gives you like one cockpit for everything. Like before, you had all those different tools and had to go to different places and kind of collect the information together and hope that you can see what the problem is. But with that, it comes with a really apparently what we've seen, what marketing wise is known, a really good chatbot. It's using generative AI systems for like to summarize things. So it doesn't look up stuff for you. Like it's not a knowledge base, because we clearly know generative AI is bad at that, but it's good at summarizing things. So it's summarizing alerts for you. It's summarizing data points for you. It's you can ask it to do certain things, like just instead of going through all the things and saying, change this one setting, you can just tell it and it does it. Stuff like that. So it's really, I think it's a good, I mean, one, we need more AI involvement in security. There's already a lot out there, but it's still very limited. We need it also available for everybody. And I think that's what this is doing, because Microsoft, something that a lot of people don't know, Microsoft is very, I would say, very influential in this market. And not just because Windows has so many issues, because they also provide a lot of really good tools for security. I mean, it's like they're I've seen some of it that like companies are using, and I'm quite impressed with what they're offering. Like especially the Defender, the whole Defender system, Zscaler, zero trust networking, and so on. How that all in tune? How that all kind of integrates with each other? And gives a lot of signals to your security team.
Right. Sure, seems like they're investing a lot on this.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very interesting, great application for AI.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's an easy application for AI, because this is all about data. It's about collecting data, identifying patterns in data, things that stick out. Like, I mean, usually, like, there's a certain behavior that your machines, your systems are having. We are users. I mean, I would say we're probably pretty predictable what we're doing for the most part. Right. I mean, every now and then there's something new happens, something changes, and something, you know, you travel all of a sudden or something. But for the most part, we're probably pretty predictable. But the hard part is finding the things that, like, don't match the pattern.
Right.
Because you have a lot of signals.
All right. Why is Tom logging in as root to the mail server today?
Yeah.
He never does that.
Yeah, but it's really hard in the signals of you logging into a million systems every day. Really hard to find that one login that probably wasn't you, but that you didn't know about.
Yeah, why is Tom remote logging in through VPN from Chile today? He never goes to
Chile. That's probably easier to identify. Yeah, I think like VPN connections and stuff like that, we've been monitoring for decades. So like, I mean, we know that, okay, all of a sudden someone is logging in from a country that we usually don't have. That's an easy one to find.
Right.
As I said, like, I mean, you're logging in, whatever, you're usually logging into the mail server throughout the day, and all of a sudden you're logging in at midnight.
Right.
Okay, what happened? Is that okay? Yeah, is that not okay?
If you're not on goal, then this is dodgy, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
And you went to the ETC directory. You never go there. Why are you going there today?
Mm. Yeah, it's like that. So that's what machines and AI are really good at. Like seeing a pattern and seeing then something that doesn't match it and then informing someone about it. So that's what I think is happening here. I said AI is important already in the security industry, but it's not available to everybody. Like it's to a lot of experts. They like easy, sure.
Security monitoring and this kind of thing in business is big at the moment. It's one of the latest trendy. Trends. It has to be even so, but it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
Every vendor, including the one I work for, we're all getting into the idea of having been able to expose all that kind of data and that to be at your fingertips. As in, and you can go, what has Tom looked in there? That's not correct. Yeah, this behavior is trends and things is where AI comes in.
Yeah, I mean, it used to be you had an office, network. There was maybe a firewall if you were lucky.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you had a VPN if someone was working from somewhere else.
Yeah.
And that was it. And that was also all the security you needed. And like if someone's, I mean, that was it. Like the most usernames and passwords were quite simple and nobody cared.
Patrice, I worked at startups where every engineer had super user access.
Yeah. I know plenty of places, even not startups, where that is still the case.
Yes,
you would be surprised how bad it is. But I mean, in the last, I want to say 10, 15 years, we've seen that is very slowly not working anymore. We've had ransomware left, right, and center. Anybody is a target because there is no single target. It's not that that someone is targeting in a specific company. It's mostly whoever is available, don't care. Like whoever is stupid enough to have whatever this version of Exchange still running locally, well, you're it.
Yeah, well, look at that. Yeah.
Like exactly. They don't like the ransom. I mean, you ransomware as a service is out there. Like
absolutely,
malware as a service is out there.
We've talked about it before. Ransomware as a service is a thing that's just free. It is dark web, no problem with the virus. Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
You harvest this thing from these users? Yeah, no problem. We can make you that.
Yes. So every company, no matter how small or big, has to deal with that to some extent.
Yes.
Like the bigger you are, the more you have to deal with it, for sure. I mean, one, because you have more people, so more risk. But also, two, you got more to lose. It's more interesting data, more money that someone could make. All of that makes you a bigger target. As I said, so like the IT departments in a lot of places have to wake up. I mean, I see that in hospitals. You would be surprised how bad IT security is in hospitals still is.
I just got a letter from my healthcare provider about a data breach.
Mm-hmm.
I would believe it.
Yeah, it's shocking. And hospitals know that and are doing something about it. And vendors are doing something about it. So as I said, like a tool like this makes it available for everybody. And I think that's the important part.
So in this article, they talk about the Defender platform, and I think Defender is still the name of the anti-malware soft application that runs on the machine. You know, when any malware first came out, they were run by off of a database with signatures of malware, known malware.
Yeah.
So how much of the Defender application running on my PC is based on a model? I mean, is that model still signatures, or are they creating
still
signatures.
Signatures,
right?
Is still the most reliable way of identifying things. That's the sad truth, because anything else is still fallible. There's other ways to do it, but none of them work reliably.
And that's so why Defender gets updated twice a week, because every time they update they the database, they need new signatures. They push
like,
it,
yep. You know? Constantly, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. There is entire teams of people doing nothing but analyzing malware that they find somewhere and creating signatures how to identify them.
Amazing. It still works reasonably well, considering, you know, it's technology that was developed, 30 years ago, 25 years ago?
Yeah, it's really surprising how well that still works, because the malware that is not known is really hard to identify.
Sure.
Like, it simply doesn't work very well. That's the problem. Yeah, but the Defender network, that's the interesting thing. The Defender network has very little to do with Windows Defender. It is one part of the Defender network, but there is a lot of other things. Like, I mean, I have on my work machine, we have a Defender ATP running. It runs on Linux servers nowadays. It runs in Kubernetes clusters. It runs everywhere, basically, because it is collecting signals. It is collecting what is happening on those systems and identifying if there's a problem.
Right.
And are the machines in compliance and stuff like that. So it does a lot of also compliance checks. Make sure, is it configured according to whatever the central security policies are? And if they're not, you get cut off.
Right.
Stuff like that. So it makes sense. I'm no expert. I don't know. Is there a better system out there? I don't know. But it is a reasonably good system.
Yeah, it's one thing I'm glad about not having a work PC anymore, is all the security crap that was loaded on it. You know, every time I boot my machine, the fan would spin for 20 minutes.
Yeah, I don't have that.
Oh, we have two Ians.
Two is better than one. I don't know what happened there. It just completely went boom.
Tegan and Defender.
Yeah, I was about to say about our product. We use Defender's engine as part of the. We've introduced a couple of new features in terms of our backup. We've always had an ability to scan the backups, but now we're integrating that into everywhere now, where you can do a virus scan, and that's using Defender's engine, because it's freely available and it's very, very good. We've tested others, and it's the one that we found the best. A lot of vendors are picking up on Defender's engine as being one of the best out there, which is shocking from when it used to be terrible and you wouldn't get
it. It was basically useless. Like, forget
it.
It
was completely useless in about 5 years ago. But now it's clearly all the data it's gathering, because the sheer exposure now, it's seriously a competitive tool. It's great. It really is.
Yeah. And as I said, that's the most important thing nowadays, to get signals from as many machines and as many points as you have, because that allows you to identify something that is happening in the network. If someone, I don't know, someone compromised a machine or an account or something, if every device in your company is reporting back what it's doing, yes, that's a bit creepy, because like it's like a privacy question, but I mean, it's a company machine, so I don't expect anything. But it really does help you identify if someone if someone is doing something they shouldn't have. And if you it might be you identify it after a couple of days, because all of a sudden you're okay, this was weird day one, but nobody noticed. But on day three, you're there is something strange going on. You can go back now and you can go back in your data and say, okay, now that we know that this is happening, we can go back and see what was that person, company, virus, whatever it was doing, and you can identify what happened and what was touched and all of that. So that signal is really important. I mean, companies are sometimes running like canaries in their networks, like little machines that simulate to some piece of equipment, but all they're doing is collecting signal information and reporting that back to a central thing like the security pilot and the Defender network and so on. Yeah. Anyway, you know what's really good, and also can be integrated into your network if you want to, That is
BSO host.
Host, exactly. They're a really great company if you need hosting. If you don't want to go with the big companies like Azure and Microsoft and AWS and so on, which are, to be fair, really expensive sometimes. You just need something like, you have simple needs, like us do, for example, at BTN. You just need something that is reliable, that just runs and runs and runs. And that is what TSO Host offers. We've had their servers for a couple of years. They've been sponsoring us for quite a while, and we're very thankful for that. And I mean, I run our servers, and I've never had a problem. They've never been down. They've never even had any issue whatsoever. They just work. If they had, I never noticed. So, like the few times the systems were down, it was always my fault. I broke something, like changed some setting and forgot something, and it broke. That happens more often than you would think. So it's not never been TSO Host's fault. It's always been my fault. They're rock solid hoster. They're really nice people. If like talk to them, of course. I've seen support like on social media over the years. Like listeners have reached out to them and had questions, and they've been nothing but super helpful and really quick in answering whatever question people had. So they're just a great company, and all they want for their support and the two servers that they pay for us. Which like everything on BTN is running on those two servers. All they want from us is that we like say thank you on our social medias and just go there and say thank you to TSO Host for supporting BTN and for being an awesome company. That's all they want. Nothing else. Like you don't have to buy anything, don't have to do anything else. You don't have to share any data with them or anything crazy. No, all they want is some brand recognition. So if you need, like, if you do need something, like you need whatever WordPress website, you need a server, you need a domain, an email package, whatever you need, you can just head over to TSO Host and then use the awesome offer code that they gave us. So not only are they supporting BTN, you also get 20% off because you can just use the code BTN20, and then you get 20% off whatever you bought. So also that is a really, really good thing to have. So just thank you to the host. Thank you for supporting us, and yeah, keep supporting us because we need that. And now we should talk about the chat, and I'm going to pick someone, and I'm going to pick Ian this time to talk about the chat. And of course, I didn't tell anybody, so it's a more of a surprise. So tell us about the chat.
The chat can be found on our IRC channel, which there is a link to on our website, which if we look for it, you'll see there's a live thing. All the chat, the nonsense that we talk and the links that we post, all gets in there. You can go and find it. I mean, I think if you hit the BTN website, you'll find the link, and then you can go in there and have a look at stuff. And all our links, all of our chat, all of that's in there. So if you hear us talk about a story, the one I talked about today, and you want to go back and have a look, very easy. You can go back there. There's Ian's story. You can click on that one, and you can get the link that we got our first. You got us for the original source. So the same with Tom's and all the other ones. They're all there. And if you come back to us and you've listened later, that's great. You can still come back and be able to look at the back. And when we do our cool things in a little while, those will be linked there too. You can go back to. So that's also helpful. I've used it myself when I thought of something. Oh, Tom, I missed something. And I've gone back and looked for it. So yeah,
I've gone back to 2015 to see what did we talk about. Like almost what is that now? 8 years ago?
8 years.
8 years ago. Oh, almost exactly 8 years ago that we started the chatbot and have had the chats in like on our website every week. So all you have to do is go to BritishTechNetwork.com/chat and have a look at our chat transcript. You might need to know that today, as we're recording it, is the 16th of November, 2023. Yeah. So that's maybe an important information if you wanna see the links for today's show. Of course, you can just go back and see any show you want and see what we talked about. So that might be interesting. Might be an interesting dive into our into our like
our back catalog of things,
our back catalog, and our, I think also our culture, how it has changed over time. Because, I mean, for sure, the things we were talking about in 2015 are not the same things we're talking about today.
I wonder if we stuffed all the chat data into a LLM generator.
It would be interesting. I should do that. And then we can simulate probably like certain people that are always in the chat and see what they talk about. Yeah. Could have an AI like a...
I think we
could have a you and AI and a Muller AI probably.
Right. That would be fun.
That would be I should do that.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Just having an AI go, that just looks at whatever you post. You wanker.
I should create a bot that just does that. That would be funny.
That would be good.
Yeah. And speaking of the chat and about like everything that we always talk about, I think cool things have been around for about as long, at least, probably longer. So it's time for the cool thing. And I think Tom, you're the first to throw in.
Okay, I'm first cool today. My pick is a t-shirt, and it's sort of a nerd version of May the Force Be With You.
Which is already a nerd thing.
Which is often, so this is nerd squared, I guess. It's from a company, one I found is from a company, I think this is people have seen this shirt, but it's from a company called A Mighty Girl, at amightygirl.com, amightygirl.com. And it's basically the formula for force. So it says May and then the force, which is instead of force equals M times A, it's F equals M dV dT, which I love. Having done plenty of math and calculus, I loved it. There was a young girl, a teenage girl at the gym I go to wearing this the other day, and I laughed out loud. I loved it. So, and it's very cheap. It's only $10 on this site. I'm sure you can find versions of this in other places, but I thought it was just a fun shirt for the Star Wars fan in your life.
Yeah, that's so cool. It's from the Ann Arbor T-shirt company originally. So,
yes. So, peeps, if you want to know what to get Patrice for Christmas.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, one of those.
Yes, I would take one.
Okay.
Women's XL, please.
Okay.
It says out of stock.
I'll have to find it somewhere else. Okay. No.
Where to purchase? It says Amazon UK. Oh no, it's okay. You can't pick it. For some reason it's not available there. It's just great. You can still get it on Amazon.com. $10.
Okay.
That's actually quite cheap. For the large, okay. Probably a bigger size.
Okay.
$10. Nice. That's a cool. I like that. Ben, what do you have as a cool thing today? Oh, I like it.
Well,
I see your link.
What I'm offering today is all of time and space.
Absolutely.
So
I'll take it.
This has a little bit of a backstory. So most people know that the BBC entered into a partnership with the Disney Corporation to produce a new era of Doctor Who. Starting with the RTD 2.0. Well, there's a little bit of a question of where you could get the old Doctor Who. If you want the first reboot, that is currently available through the Warner Brothers Discovery Service Max, that you have to pay for it. Disney Plus, you're obviously going to have to pay for, but the first seven Doctors in Classic Who are now available for free in the United States through Fox's Tubi. All the episodes are not going to be grouped by season. They are grouped by Doctor.
That's cool.
Yep. So, let's say you want all of Tom Baker's episodes, you can just watch Tom Baker's episodes. If you want, you know, the first doctor, he's there. If you want the eighth doctor, nobody knows how to find him.
True.
But there's even a 24/7 classic Doctor Who channel.
Wow.
So if you want those old serials of the 50s through 80s, and you're in the United States, if you're in the UK, you already the Beeb already has everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've just dropped a link into that one. The Hooniverse, if you've got a VPN and you can make yourself a peerage if you're in, then they've got a wonderful thing called the Hooniverse on BBC iPlayer, and every episode, including stuff where they'd lost the tapes, they've animated them.
Yes.
For some of the old for some of the old William Hartnell episodes, there's animated versions of the episodes. Yes. We're just flicking through.
And Tubi includes those as well.
Oh, does it? Excellent. Yeah, there's all that. And then we've got all stuff with Patrick Troughton as the Doctor. And you've then got, of course, moving into the world of colour and everything. It's all brilliant.
The big question is there the lost Eighth Doctor movie?
Yeah, I think it's there. I'm sure the movie is there. Because I'm flicking through to see.
You got 8 days, 22 hours, 40 minutes, and about 7 seconds.
Yes, the TV movie from 1996 is there. Yeah, the movie is indeed there. Nice. If you want to watch that travesty of justice, you can.
Highly recommended from Ian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So nobody has to watch this. Has anybody ever seen? If anybody has ever seen Jason Goes to Hell, take that and replace Jason with the Master. It's the same plot.
Which Master, Missy?
No, the problem. in that era, it'd be Roger Delgado.
Okay.
Even worse.
Yeah.
Missy would have been worse.
Technically, that character is not the Doctor. The Doctor is just possessing it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's also got the Five Doctor special with all of the old ones there together insulting one another, mm-hmm. which is good fun.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah. Also good fun is probably your cool thing, Ian. Your next
one. Yeah, I have got a link to a book on Audible. It's a link to a story of a guy called Eric Winkle Brown. He was one of Britain's greatest pilots. He had an innate knack to flying aeroplanes. He's certified on something like 480 different types. He pioneered landing on our aircraft carriers in jets. He flew some of the first helicopters in the UK. And it's just an incredible story of his life. And what's more interesting is there's been books written about this guy before. And the guy who wrote this one approached him and said, "Can I write you a full autobiography?" He said, mm-hmm. "Yes, but wait till I'm dead, laddie. Wait till I'm dead." And so he honoured that. And I mean, he died a grand old age of 90-ish about 5 years ago. And they wrote the book. And there was all sorts of things people discovered about him they never knew. He met Hitler. He travelled in Germany extensively before the war, met some of the early acrobatic pilots of the day. You know, that there's... Mm-hmm. Fascinating man, interesting, and some of the crackers things that I'm part way through at the moment. His girlfriend, when he during the war, was in Belfast. He was based in the north of Scotland training, and when it was quiet, he'd borrow an aeroplane and nip across to go and see her and bring it back. He got into trouble when he got caught. Can you imagine that now? Oh, I'm just going to borrow one of the. I'm just going to borrow one of those Phantom. I'm just going to borrow those jets and go across that. No, that's not going to happen. But the 40s, it's just fascinating. If you enjoy stuff about the RAF, you enjoy stuff about astonishing characters. I can highly recommend a credit to go that. Tom, mm-hmm. you probably enjoy that one. I thought because you recommended the one good. I liked. The bomber, the bomber, the Malcolm Gladwell's bomber thing.
Right, that was good. Yeah, this looks good.
I recommend it highly. It's fascinating. Yeah.
That looks really
good. He became a test pilot, you see, after the end, during the war and stuff, and he flew all manner of random things. Just an innate knack to be able to work out how an aeroplane
UFOs
works.
And, oh.
Yeah, probably, yeah. If they give him it, he probably worked out how to fly it, judging by what they say.
Yeah.
That's good.
Coming from a naval aviation family.
Yeah.
There were always two names that comes up that as far as test pilots go. The Royal Navy's Captain Eric Brown.
Yep, this guy.
Yep, and Admiral James Flatley.
I've heard of him as well, yes.
Let me put it this way. His son was the one who landed the C-130 on an aircraft carrier.
Yikes. A C-130.
They are considered basically the first family of naval aviation. So this is definitely something I will be mm-hmm. reading.
Yeah.
It's well worth it. There's Wings on My Sleeve is his own one. But this is probably the definitive one now because it's based on all of his records. They were very nice. His death. He willed that the author could have full access to all of his archives and his logbooks and everything. And they've done that wonderful thing. I've got it pieced together with every bit of history they can get and link, try and establish how much of it's fact and how much of it's fantasy. Really, really good.
Very cool.
I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I'm thoroughly enjoying it, to be fair.
My cool thing ties into your cool thing, Ian.
Ooh.
So since we were talking about like monopolies and big players in the market, you know, Audible basically owns the audiobook market. There is rarely anybody else. Thanks to how Amazon is operating on the market, basically. And one of those that I think there's also a lawsuit going on, if I remember correctly, currently. I think the U.S. government is suing Amazon again for some reason or another.
Are they doing another antitrust lawsuit to prop up Amazon's monopoly?
Yeah, kind of, exactly. But there is some alternatives. Likely. I mean, there's for sure the Apple Books thing, but that's kind of abandoned. But there is a cool one that I think I heard from Brett Terpstra recently. It's Libro.fm. And the cool thing about them is they're very similar to Audible. You can get packages where like it's once a month or like one credit or two credits a month costs about the same. Like when I looked, it's about the same price. But what the cool thing about it, that platform is they somehow figured out a way to partner with local bookstores. Not every bookstore is supported. I think in Austria, there's literally only one in Salzburg for some reason. There's an English bookstore in Salzburg. I'm guessing it just hasn't reached Austria yet, but I saw in the UK and the US, there were plenty of options. And they partner with local bookstores. And whenever you buy an audiobook, a share of that purchase goes to your local bookstore. So you're supporting, ideally, your own bookstore that you like to go to. Maybe suggest to them if their bookstore is not on the platform, you could suggest it to them. But it's a really cool thing. And the other thing is you can actually gift credit. So I saw like here, I can like someone could buy a 24 credit bundle for me. It's only 320 euros. So not that much. And then like, I mean, you can buy it one or two credits and gift it to them. So it's a really cool thing. Not every book is on there because you might have noticed on Audible, and I have like 180 books on Audible or something. I'm constantly buying books. And some of their stuff is Audible exclusive, and you would wonder why. Why would Audible care? And that's why, because they have actually some competition. Like it's not zero. And so they're trying to have exclusive deals so that nobody else can get their books. But there's, I checked actually, Ian, the book you were suggesting, and I'll throw the link in, is actually on the platform.
Yeah. Yeah, I just found it here. Yeah.
Yeah. And
how is the iOS app, Patrice?
The app is good. I've not had any problems. I mean, the Audible app is also not great on iOS, so there's that. As I said, it's like works really well. I've only bought one book so far, so I said, I have 170, some of them my favorites on Audible, not going to buy all of them again. But this might be something where you're like, I might as well try something else and maybe not support the big Amazon conglomerate, just support your local bookstores because they're dying. So yes, then I just wish there was a store in Vienna I could support on Salzburg, but I'm fine. Like, it's Austria. So
good. Oh, they have my bookstore.
Nice. So that's very good. That's it. And I don't know what their share is, but I would say, well, instead of giving it to Amazon, might as well, like, even if it was 5 cents, give it to them. Like, who cares? Yeah, it's a social purpose corporation. So I think that's an important part. They're not for profit or social purpose. So their purpose is to do social things with the money they make. So sure, they pay regular, like, as everybody has to. They pay the authors and the production company for the audiobook and all of that, for sure. But any money they make on top of that has a good purpose. So why not support that? That I heard. I'm pretty sure I heard it from Brett Hurst. Right? So,
wow, my bookstore is on it too.
See,
excellent. That works.
Yeah. So, as that, the let's say there is some downsides. Like, if you, for example, need, like, if you're using Kindle and you use that Whisper thing where you can switch between the book and the audiobook, well, they don't have that. So sure, like, it's not the same. But if you, like me, just listening to audiobooks all the time, why not check them out? See if the book you're listening to is available and get it there.
This might solve one of my Christmas gift challenges for my wife, I think.
Yeah. Maybe also important, the audiobooks are DRM free.
Nice.
So that's, I think, also an important point compared to Amazon. Like,
so you really can listen anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anywhere, any device. Yeah. Actually, they're saying you can even get the printed edition for some books. I just saw it here. Like for the Winkle book, there's a printed book you could get. So I guess they also have printed books.
Huh.
Yeah, that's cool. Good
to
know.
Good pick.
All right. Good. That kind of concludes the show, I would say. So all we have to do is thank everybody and tell the good listeners where they can find out more about you. And I'm going to go reverse order. So I'm going to start with Tom.
You can find me on Mastodon. I am tomf@sfba.social. And you can find me hopefully every week here on The Big Show. Thanks, Patrice. Thanks for hosting.
Thank you. Thank you for always being awesome and bringing chip knowledge to our unqualified. No, anyway. Ian, where can people find
people
out?
People can
more
find
about
me
you?
Here on The Big Show, as always, on Thursdays, providing I'm not somewhere else. And you can usually find me easily on LinkedIn under my business thing, because I work for Veeam. My name's Ian Grant. You can find me around that way. It's quite an easy way of finding me. Otherwise, look in the Slack room. I sometimes pop up in there offering sage advice or just being silly, one or the other, probably both. So I'm also there. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you, Ian. And Ben, where can people find out more about your awesome self?
Well, Patrice, you can find me at Ben Rathig on Twitter. Or not Twitter, but social media. My brain went back a year.
Yeah, probably about five. Maybe you went back to 2015.
Yeah, I'm on all the social media. You can find my writings. I have a brand new article up about the upcoming Windows and ARM chips on Tuesday night. You can find me on Mac Voices with Chuck Joyner. On Thursday nights, you can find me on In Touch with iOS with Dave Ginsberg. And Thursday and Friday, you can find me here on the British Tech Network on the Big and Mac shows. And I think we lost Patrice.
No, I'm still here. You just lost my camera. I think something happened with the camera. You can find more about me on every week. Well, actually, you can find me. Well, I start turning camera again. You can find out, but you can find me every week here on the Big Show on Thursdays and also on the Mac Show on Fridays. So if you're into the Apple side of things, head over to the Mac Show Friday, 4 p.m. That's when we live record. We're also in the live chat at that point. So hint, hint. You can find all the social media links, all the podcasts, the projects, literally everything that I'm doing on my website, thepatrice.com. I was also on the Mac Voices gift guide this week. Don't know when that one is coming out. Probably next couple of weeks, probably. I don't know. I think we were the third episode, so could be a while, but there were some really cool people on the panel and we had a lot of fun and we had some really cool things for your holiday, like holiday gifts or stocking stuffers that you could buy. So keep an eye out for that. And yeah, you can find me also on my podcast, Foodie Flashback, where I talk to really cool people about food, food-related stories and memories and just everything that goes with that. And with that, thank you everybody for listening. Thank you for making it through another show. Thank you for being in the chat. And thanks, Ewan, for still allowing us to do this. I hope we see you at some point again. It's been too long. Like we need a Ewan episode. Thanks, Motorbiker, for always being there for us and organizing things and telling us when the stream isn't working and all of that. It's also important. Again, my fault. As I mentioned before, usually I break something. It is a host's fault. And see you next week, hopefully. Talk to you then. Bye-bye.